I've enjoyed the lively song service, good words in the prayer, seeing everyone here. Enjoyed a little shower we had coming down the road, too. We all needed that. And I hope to continue on and quite to do a little better with time management tonight than I did last night. Hopefully we'll get through all of our lesson. Those of you that were here last night, we got through 11 items of the 15 items of love in 1 Corinthians 13. And I must have hit a nerve because I had a lot of compliments, not on my delivery, but on the subject matter. And so I thought, if that's what people like and they think that it's helping, I'm going to hang in there and finish the other four. And so the lesson that I was going to use tonight, I just picked out little bits and pieces of it to say that I've covered the topic that I was going to cover tonight. And so the title's kind of messy, How I Love to Save My MPLO. It's a combination of the lesson we had last night and what we want to talk about tonight. We got a few visitors and some that haven't been here, so we'll review just a very little bit, just three or four slides to review. Try to answer three questions at the end of the lesson, give you something to think about. These are the three questions I'll give them to you at the start of the lesson. Is the law a distraction to my love? Am I giving agape love? And how can I save my MPLO? So we asked a question last night, what is law in the first place? And we'll go through this quickly. By dictionary, it's a rule of conduct or procedure established by custom, agreement, or authority. It is also the body of rules, not just one, but a group of rules and principles governing the affairs of a community and enforced by a political authority or a legal system. And it's also the condition of social order and justice created by adherence to such a system. So what we're talking about tonight are individual rules, as Paul laid them out for us on how we should love each other in 1 Corinthians 13. And hopefully at the end of the lesson, we'll have time to bind all these together to show you that they form a body of rules which should create a condition in our churches, in our homes, in our own individual minds, in our relationships, in everything we do. What we're studying tonight is the backbone of it. By observation, as we tried to show last night, law is a statement of fact by the prophets, by Jesus, or the apostles. A statement. The law can simply be a statement, not a thou shalt do this and a thou shalt do that. But it could be a simple statement. How many times did Jesus say, unless you do this, you cannot get into heaven? That wasn't in the form of a command. That was a fact. And as we mentioned last night, a smart man will take facts and think through the consequences and take appropriate action. And so Jesus in the four Gospels left many things as simply a statement of fact, as Paul did here. Observations on love. Let's look at our two Greek words. Two Greek words were translated love, also translated charity, with slightly but significantly different meanings. Phileo, warm, fuzzy, feely kind of love, as of a friend. We might add another word that starts with F in there and say it's also fickle sometimes. Sometimes it's fickle. Phileo love can change sometimes. It can be a little moody sometimes. Sometimes it can talk to you and sometimes it won't talk to you. But on the other hand, we're talking about agape love, which is the word used most of the time in the New Testament. Most of the time it's agape love, and that is rock solid love. That's not the love that changes with the mood, not changes with the weather. But this is the way we intend to treat people, not for what we're going to get out of them. If we treat someone good based on what we think we're going to get out of them, that's phileo love. That can be fickle. But if we treat them the way God would want us to treat them, we'll be the same way with them every day. And we'll be rock solid. And that's what we want to be. Okay, there are only 15. I won't show you the verse. I'll just go ahead and give you the list. Charity suffers long and is kind. Charity envies not. Charity vaunts not itself, is not puffed up. Does not act unseemly, seeks not her own, is not provoked, thinks no evil. Rejoiceth not in iniquity, but rejoices in the truth. Bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, and endures all things. I hope that someone memorized those things last night. We tried to break them out. Verse 4 has the first five. It makes them easier to grasp. Suffers long, kind, envies not, vaunts not itself, is not puffed up. Of course, we studied last night, vaunts not and is not puffed up. Those are back to back. Those are easy. If you remember one of them, you're going to remember the other one because they're back to back in meaning. Then the next four were verse 5, does not act unseemly, seeks not her own, is not provoked, and thinks no evil. And those are very distinct. I mean, you can hang your hat on any one of those four. Then the next two go together, rejoices not in iniquity, but rejoices in the truth. So that should be a snap to memorize. And then the last four, bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things, are written so similar that they'll be easy to remember. Now what we're going to do is to go into number 11, which was rejoiceth in the truth, because I hit this one last night just about the time I made up my mind I couldn't go any farther, and I fumbled around with it. And there's something too good here to not go back and review and pick up. Love rejoiceth not in iniquity, but rejoiceth in the truth. For a long time, I thought, and had always heard it preached, that this truth was the truth that's in the Bible. Rejoiceth in the truth. Well, that's okay. That's an okay definition. But a fuller definition of the word is not about the word of God. It's about the character of man. And that word truth also has the meaning of personal excellence. A true spirit free from affection, pretense, simulation, falsehood, and deceit. A true spirit. I mentioned a minute ago that phileo love could be fickle. It could change. It could be moody. Agape love is rock solid. It's the same all the time. A friend of mine talked about going home to his wife after a day's work. And this was a lady that I'd been seeing in church for a long time. And she always appeared the same in church. You know, I guess we have our church face on. She appeared the same in church. But he made the statement. He said, when I come home in the afternoon, I throw my hat in the door. And if it comes flying back out, I know, get ready, because it's going to be a rough night. But if she doesn't throw my hat out the door, I know she's in a pretty good mood, and I can come on in and be relaxed. How would you like to live in a situation like that? Phileo love is fickle love. It's moody love. It can change. Agape love is God-given, God-directed. And listen, friends, God doesn't change. Jesus doesn't change. Have you ever in your life had the idea that at any time you wanted to pray to God, He would be on His cell phone and wouldn't be listening to you? Or He'd be playing a video game and He wouldn't be listening to you? Or He'd be watching TV and He wouldn't be listening to you? Or He'd be talking with somebody else and wouldn't be, or He'd want to interrupt you before you ask Him what you wanted? No. Because we know God is solid. He's there all the time. He's always there for us. We always have a friend in Jesus. It's not iffy. It's not fickle. Rejoiceth in the truth. A true man will be a true friend to you. He'll be the same all the time. Rejoice, the word rejoice in that phrase, may refer to the spark in our life. It's what really makes us happy. It's our enthusiasm. It's what we can really get behind. Rejoice in the truth. Rejoice in true people. Not rejoice in iniquity or sinful people or the sins of others. But we rejoice in a true person. A true person will be a true friend to you. So how do we cause ourselves to rejoice in the truth? Well, one thing we've got to do is we've got to hate sin. I mean, we got to hate sin. If we want to be true, if we want to be a true person and we want to look for true people, we've got to hate sin and the sins that people commit. Hate sin to the point there is no pleasure in seeing it or hearing about it or being in the company of those that openly practice iniquity. Hate sin. Think of a mom and dad who's just got home from burying their son that was killed by a drunk driver. And they sit down and watch TV, and one of the first things that comes on TV is a beer commercial. Now, wouldn't you think you'd just be ready to pick up something and throw it right through the TV? Wouldn't you be so distraught and so sick of that that you would not sit there and take that commercial in? Hate sin. Sin will send us to hell. It will send our most precious loved one to hell. We must hate sin. Hate it. Be careful who you cheer for and who you identify with, because it will identify you. If you're a race car driver, drives for a liquor company, and you want to wear a jacket with his name on it, and it just happens to have an advertisement for that liquor company on it because they sponsor him, you're identified with all of that. Be careful about your Facebook posts, too. It's what's in the background. I've seen some Facebook posts from some church people that I was a little bit surprised. So be careful. You'll be identified. Be careful who you cheer for and who you identify with. Cherish time and be happy with good people. Good people. Appreciate good people. Copy those true people in your life, those people that you look up to. I make no bones about it. I've always tried to copy the best of the best people I knew. I copy a lot of what I see out of you. So show me some good stuff, and I'll try to copy it. I'll try to put it in my life. Okay, we get into the last four. And the last four, because of the way it's written, bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. It's easy just to kind of run through them and not realize that they are special and they are different. Bears all things. Let's make sure that we got the spelling right on this word. The word is spelled B-E-A-R, not B-A-R-E. Okay? Some people think it says bears all things as in exposes every mistake you ever made. Every slip of the tongue, everything that can be said negatively against you. Some people think that it's love is to bear, B-A-R-E, but it's really B-E-A-R. And it doesn't mean hold up, under. That is in the word endure, which is the last one. This word bear actually means to cover with silence, to conceal, not to make known, to forbear, which is to not say what you could say, to hold back what you could say, forbear, to suffer. Not to notice or revenge the error of others. Now, I really need that. Because I've got one fault that stands out that you probably pick up is I'll talk about one thing and I'm thinking about another. And to illustrate the point, I was talking to Harrison this afternoon, and I was telling him that I needed to go inside and sit down and work on my lesson, but he was wanting me to get through in time to go with him to a movie. And so what I told Harrison was, Harrison, you got to let me go because I've got to go inside and work on my movie. Okay? Because I was talking about one thing and I was already thinking ahead. Not to notice or revenge the error of others. Only, this is my rule of thumb, I'm just throwing this out here. Only ask for a correction if you absolutely cannot figure out what the other person was trying to say. But if you can figure out what he's trying to say, bear with him. He'll think a lot more of you. He'll be a lot more comfortable in conversation with you. Okay, so how do I get the attitude to bear all things? Focus on the bigger goal of their confidence and not on feeding big ego with minor corrections and gossip. Big ego's a monster. And if he's your favorite pet, I feel sorry for those that live around you, because you'll do a lot of things to feed big ego. Big ego consumes a lot of good relationships. The bigger goal is the confidence of the other person. Good conversationalist knows how to build up the other person. Remember a story that was told by a woman who happened to go out to dinner with, I believe, Winston Churchill, who was a high person in England. And then there was another person, and I can't remember his name, and I don't know if he was a high person in France or in England. But she went out with him as a dinner guest on two separate nights. And on the first night, she went out with the other person besides Winston Churchill, and she said, "After I came back, I felt like he was the smartest person in the world. I was so impressed with him." The next night, she went out with Winston Churchill, and she said, "I came home from him, being with a dinner guest with him, I felt like I was the smartest person in the world." Do you get it? You know what he had done? He was a good conversationalist. He built her up instead of building himself up. That's an art. That's an acquired art that I'd like to have. Remember the last time you put your foot in your mouth yourself, and it might make it easier to bear with someone else. Realize that how we converse with others may be the best setting we will have to show love, agape love, show respect to them. And how we converse. Are you trying to be a good conversationalist? And do you realize that God wants you to be one? He wants you to. Okay, the second one in that group of four is believes all things. Now let's define this first. Believes all things. It must be about the conduct and the intent of others, because it cannot be about error. The scriptures cannot be telling us to believe error in doctrine or in public sins by a brother, or a case where scriptural rebuke or withdrawal is required. To believe all things can't mean something like that. So it must be about a gray area of unclear motives and not hard facts. We're not asked to believe a lie or something that's untrue. But if there's a way to be lenient, we need to believe in another person. Believe that good was the intent, or that good will be the outcome when the dust settles. It should be our attitude. Well, how do we do that? We can say it, we can define it, but how do we get that in our character? Realize most people are doing the best they know how to do, and that we need the same mercy from God ourselves. As we mentioned a couple of times last night, how did we happen to be born in a time to get taught the Bible in a way that it affected us the way it has for us to be here? We could have been born in 100 places in the world, and we would have had very little chance to believe the things we believe now, just because of where we were born and where we were brought up to read and to think and to believe. Remember that someone said, I don't know, remember exactly who, you help me out with this, but somebody said, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." What is he saying? Forgive the people of their ignorance. Don't take them to task on it. Don't judge them forever on it. But forgive them, Father, for they know not what they do. Hopes all things. This one ought to be pretty easy. Hope for the best motives in other people, hoping that they're going to do good. Hope people will change. Hope in trusting people to do the right thing. Hope that words and actions and plans will be good. Hope that others will change for the better. Confidence that what we want to happen will happen is all involved in hoping. We have hope that things will go good in the future. So-and-so will make a right choice. So-and-so will come back to the church. We hope these things will happen. Somehow, it just seems like suffers long ought to fit in here somewhere. And that was the first one. Love suffers long. Hope goes with it. Well, how do we do this? How do we change from a negative attitude to a positive attitude? An attitude of despair to an attitude of hope. Well, one way is to realize future events haven't happened yet and believe they will be better than present results indicate. Believe something might happen. Pray that a change will be made. Even though it may be a while off, just still pray and still display the qualities of love in everything that you do. Do you believe that all things work together for good? Romans 8:28. If you memorize that one and roll it over often, when things are looking bad, you got to think, God is in control. I'm not in control of this ship. God is in control of this ship if you completely put yourself in His hands. Now, the last one is endures all things, which you might have thought, what, bears all things, but bears all things meant something else entirely. But this one does mean to suffer with the situation if it needs to be that way. Endures all things. It could be about persecution, okay? And persecution was prophesied for the early church, so it could be about persecution. But the context of this is in a passage which 14 times before this one has been about how we treat our fellow man. It hadn't been about persecution in the church. It's been about between me and you. And so I think that's still the context we need to put this in. It could be about persecution, but the whole passage has been about loving our fellow man and abiding in an attitude of love. Now this is the tricky part about understanding this one is we can suffer a lot of things by just bowing up and bristling up and just getting by. Just getting by. We can endure a lot of things. But I think what Paul is trying to tell us is if we can do it in a loving way, we won't have to bristle up quite as much. It won't be quite as big a burden. We won't appear to be under such a dreadful load of despair. But we can bear up and still give a hope to somebody that might ask us why we've got hope in the first place. Like Peter said, bears up under, sustains, does not murmur, endures disappointments and delays at the hand of another, patiently waits for our hope to be fulfilled, bears with those that don't bear all things. See, we're getting to the point that you should have enough remembrance of those 15 things to see how they begin to tie together. And one will be the building block for the next one. And this one is a building block. Bears all things, be patient, endure all things. Well, how do we do that? How? Think about this. Realize that the loss of a relationship surrendered. Now remember that phrase, we're going to come back. The loss of a relationship surrendered would be far greater than our momentary mental or physical discomfort. Remember the part last night where we talked about exasperation, where people just get in a relationship and they allow themselves to become exasperated and just throw up their hands and say, whatever. What have they done? They have just about surrendered that relationship. They've just about given up on it. They've just about become dead emotionally to it. They've become stonewalled to that relationship. And you just don't want to push somebody to that point. The Bible says it like a brother offended is harder to be won than a strong city. A brother offended, a brother pushed too far, someone pushed too far, a husband or wife pushed too far to the point of exasperation where they throw up their hands and say, whatever. Love will endure all things. Sometimes we just have to bow up and say, hit me with your best shot. You know, I showed you a song last night about Jesse's girl. Sometimes some songs stick in my head. certain phrase in a certain song. And there was a song that came out. It said, "Hit me with your best shot, and I'll stand here for you." That's what love does. That's what agape love does. Phileo love won't. People get married for phileo love, and they get divorced because that's all they had. They don't know how to change it over and live out their marriage in agape love. Give me with your best shot, and I'll still be here. There's only 15. Suffers long, is kind, envies not, vaunts not itself, not puffed up, does not act unseemly, seeks not her own, not provoked, thinks no evil, rejoiceth not in iniquity, rejoices in the truth, bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, and endures all things. It's easy to run through that list and think there's a lot of overlap. And there is a little overlap, but there's so much different about each one. We need to absorb each one and be able to recall it when we need it. What is law? It is a rule. It is the body of rules. It is the condition of social order and justice. We've studied individual rules to create a condition by observation. These were given to us as statements of fact by the Apostle Paul. Well, I was corrected the other night after church by Brad. He said, you might want to throw another one in there. He told me to go home and look at the meaning of the word fail in the next verse. Verse 8 says, charity never fails. He said, go home and look up the definition of that word. Well, I did. And this is what the word actually means. It means a little bit more than I thought it meant. The word that was translated fail there means to drop away, to be driven out of one's course, to lose, to become inefficient, to fail, to take none effect, to perish, to fall from a place which one cannot keep, to fall powerless. Okay, this is sort of one idea or one concept that backs up all the other 15 individual ones. This one says love, true agape love, is not going to fail. It's not going to become inefficient or ineffective. It's not going to perish. It's going to be there. Charity never fails. Love never fails, never falls away. It's going to be there to do whatever it can, whatever the other person will let us do. If we're copying techniques, we're doomed. If you look at those 15 things as being simply a technique, as in a calm answer turns away wrath, if it's only a technique to get by, then we're doomed. We've got to operate under feelings. Love is not, one last shot here, love is not a group activity. Now that may be hard to believe. But love, you may be in a group that loves each other, but if the group loves each other, it's because each member loves each other. If you're a part of a loving family, it's because each member of that family is a loving person. My love can't rub off on you. I can act in a loving way and make you want to copy it, make you like it. But my love is the way I treat you, is what I do. It's not a group activity. Okay, mental reality test. We've used that term mental reality several times. Two women were talking. One of them said, you know, my husband and I have got a great relationship. We've been married almost 50 years, and we have never had an argument. The lady she was talking to said, well, you know, we've been married almost 50 years. My husband and I have been almost 50 years, and I can truly say we've never had a productive argument. The first one asked, what are you talking about? And the second one says, well, every time we start discussing something, one of us gets mad, and one of us gets hot and agitated and walks away. We never reconcile. We never come to an agreement. We just kind of let it fester until about 3 weeks later, and then we start all over again. we never had a productive argument. I'm just going to throw this out here. One thing you need to learn how to do and teach your kids is how to argue productively. There is a way to argue correctly that clears the air, that gets decisions made theoretically. A husband and wife should only argue about one thing one time. And when they get through that argument, they should have settled it. Now, they may argue about another thing the next night, but that first one, theoretically, should have been settled if two people know how to argue correctly. Perhaps this is what Paul meant when he said, Ephesians 4:26 to 27, be you angry and sin not. Let not the sun go down upon your wrath, neither give place to the devil. You raise your voice in anger. How many of those items that Paul listed, how many of those 15 things have you already broken? Well, you've already thought evil. You've already sought something besides yourself. You've already blown it on suffering long. You've already messed up on bears all things. So that's at least four. And we could keep going, but don't you see? Don't you see how important those 15 things are to obey all of those 15 things because they're commandments? Colossians 3:18 and 19, Paul said, wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands as it is fit in the Lord. Husbands, love your wives and be not bitter. Bitter against them. Love and bitterness. Why is it in a relationship? I don't have the answer. I'm not going to give you that. I'm just going to raise the question. What do you think? What do you think is the quirk about human nature that Paul would say, love them and be not bitter? And there's really nothing he would put in between. It wasn't like love them less or just be patient or just hang in there or it'll get better. He just said, love them. Don't be bitter. It's like one extreme to the other is what Paul says. Is he trying to tell us that that's the way it is? I mean, obviously we can see that because people either stay together or in this day and age they divorce. They don't hang around for things to get better much. Sometimes they do, but most of the time if they just don't have everything just like they want, they split, they leave. Unless they've been raised like we have to believe that scripturally we're supposed to stay. But some people don't. So maybe Paul was, years ago, maybe Paul was already hinting that that might be what happens. And that's why Paul said to love. 1 Peter 3:1-2. Likewise, you wives. Now, as we read this, I want you to really read between the lines on what Peter says. Read between the lines and see where agape love comes in here. Likewise, you wives, be in subjection to your own husbands, that if any obey not the word, they also may, without the word, be won by the conversation of the wives, while they behold your chaste conversation coupled with fear. Without the word, be won. So what has the wife got to do? What can she talk about? What can she express? How can she best express it? In her actions, in the way she carries herself, in the way she handles herself. I can read a ton of agape love in what Peter just required of men and women. And if you keep reading in this chapter, you get to the part where it says that husbands are supposed to honor the wife as the weaker vessel and take care of her. So a ton of agape love has got to be done. If those commandments are going to be observed, a ton of agape love. So let's change gears just a little bit because time's getting short and we want to move into what I was going to talk about tonight. And I feel strongly enough about this one point to bring it in. But it's an easy thing to blend into what we're talking about. And that is our MPLO. How can I save my MPLO? And you probably already picked up on it. I gave it to you just a minute ago. Our MPLO is our most precious loved one. Our most precious loved one. How can I save my most precious loved one? And why should this be even a topic? Well, let me draw you a picture. Let's assume that this is our... I'm going to draw you a picture of our universe with circles. We are in the center. It depends on how strongly we feel about how great we are, as to how big that middle circle is. But regardless, we are all self-centered just enough that we're in the middle of it. Now, way on the outside is a circle of concern. Circle of concern, that's a lot of people. That's all the people that you hear about on the news that you don't really know, but you feel for them. They're your acquaintances that you know. You're concerned. You're honestly concerned, but you're not close enough to make a difference. But we've got a smaller circle closer around us. That's our circle of influence. Now, that could be just a handful of people, or it could be more than that, but people that know how we live, know what we stand for, and they think enough of it, we're showing them enough that they want what we've got and would be influenced by what we are doing and what we're preaching and what we stand for. A circle of influence. But that's not the one I want to talk about. The one I want to talk about is a little tighter circle than that. That's the little tight circle of your most precious loved one. I hope you can see that first little ring around the bullseye. Your most precious loved one. Now, I want you to fantasize with me here for a minute. And don't, for just this little bit, don't have the idea that I love everybody. I love everybody the same. No. I'm not asking you to be sinful, but don't think of it that way. I want you to zero in on one. One person. The person closest to you. And you could have a lot of people that you're close to. I do. But one that has, say, recently done something that humbled them, or they did something for you in a special way, or one that acted in such a tender way that did something that endeared you for that moment, that endeared you to them so much that you would say, at this moment, that one. Not, you're not trying to put the others down, but I need you to focus on one. Why is that one so important? Why is it important that we have one person that can raise our emotions that much? The one is important because it's what drives our sympathy to empathy to compassion and then finally to passion. It's what makes us alive instead of being dull and exasperated. Okay? Let's look at it. A necessary progress of emotions. And we'll explain this and it should be clear. We'll start at the bottom of the list on sympathy. We feel sympathy for someone when we feel sorry for someone. Feel sorry for someone. If you see someone begging on the side of the road, you don't know them. You don't know their situation. You don't know why they're begging on the side of the road. But you feel sorry enough that you stop and you give them money. You have felt sympathy for that person. The next step up is you feel empathy for that person. Empathy means you're sorry for them, you've got sympathy, but you identify with them close enough that you feel their pain. The guy in Walmart that says, look, I had a job and I lost it. I was trying to work. I lost my job and I'm trying to feed my family and I'm out here asking, yeah, out here begging. I had to give him some money because it's never been me. But it could be, and I can think what would happen if I lost a paycheck or two. And so I wouldn't want to be in that guy's shoes. See, that's a little bit more than sympathy. It's when you actually can identify, you take the time to get in mental reality with that person. See? All right, go a little farther. Well, what about compassion? Compassion, you have sympathy, you have empathy, and compassion is you feel it so strong, you want to fix things. You want to correct things. Your most precious loved one, you don't stop at sympathy with your most precious loved one. You don't stop at empathy with your most precious loved one. You don't stop at compassion either. But we haven't got there yet. Compassion, you want to fix it. We get to the last one. We get to passion. Now, this should be easy to remember because you remember the movie about Christ. What was that movie called about his crucifixion? It was called The Passion. Because Jesus loved us enough not to just say it, and not to just preach it, and not to just sacrifice himself in discomfort while he preached to people, but he loved us enough to do it. The passion of Christ was the crucifixion of Christ. It was doing it. And that's what passion is. And that's how far we would go with our most precious loved one. A friend, we might go up to compassion with a friend. A neighbor that we hardly speak to, we might go up to empathy with him, maybe compassion. But our most precious loved one, there is no stopping our emotions. There's none. Our most precious loved one pulls us all the way to passion as far as we can go, and it won't let us rest. It won't let us be lackadaisical. It won't let us be nonchalant. It won't let us pass off the sins of others as if it's not true. Our most precious loved one will have us clamoring and beating at their door, and if they're fixing to get in trouble, we do everything we can to get them out of it. We talk, we do everything we can, because our passion will not let us nonchalantly surrender that relationship. Now think about it. How many times have you heard of people that were your friends, went to church with? Man, they've got their lives in a mess. They've gone over here and they've done that, and they've done this, and this has happened to them, and I'm sorry it happened, and I hope they repent and come back. But that's as far as it goes. Now, what if that was your most precious loved one? If it was that one most precious loved one, you think you'd be that nonchalant? You think you'd let it pass by that easy? I wouldn't. I might be making an idiot out of myself, but they'd know why I did it. That's the passion. That's why having one special person and knowing it, that's why it's so special. Not trying to put anybody else down, but thinking of that one that pulls us into this passionate feeling. The one makes us focus our attention on an attainable goal. And that attainable goal is their salvation. And it makes us focus on it. The one awakens our inner thirst and hunger for salvation for ourselves. How can we save them if we don't save us? Because you pull people along with you to salvation. You don't push them to salvation. You pull them. So you make sure you're doing everything right. If we could only love Jesus with the passion with which we love our one. If we could only love Jesus. Now, this is really, this statement right here is not really as effective, because there was a lot of scriptures that go in here with abiding in Jesus, with loving Jesus, by His stripes we are healed. All these kind of things to make us feel passion for what Christ has done for us, which I didn't have time to put in this lesson. But just think about that. If we could only love Jesus, and I know we all say we love Jesus. We say we do. And for the most part, we do. We do love Him. But do we love Him with the passion for our most precious loved one? First question, in conclusion, is the law a distraction to my love? In other words, I sort of like this free spirit kind of love, like some people think. I mean, I either love something or I don't. I don't want somebody to tell me how to love. And so the very idea of going by the rules of the Bible to direct our love is repulsive, because they like this free love stuff. I love you the way I want to love you. I love you the way you make me feel. Well, that's good phileo love, but that's not worth a flip for agape love. No, the law is not a distraction if you understand it. It is a direction. It gives direction to your love. Am I giving agape love? Well, I'm going to answer that with a question. Who are you trying to make feel good? If you're trying to make yourself feel good, no, you're not loving with agape love. If you're trying to make the other person feel good, then, yeah, you're getting close. You're on the right track. If you watch the things you say, you watch the things you do, you take care of your business with an idea of helping somebody else, if you're trying to make them feel good, you may be on the track for agape love. How can I save my most precious loved one? Study the word harder. That's an indirect answer. I'll tell you a quick cartoon. We're getting late and I know we got to go. Quick cartoon right here. It stayed on my wall at my cubicle probably for 20 years that I worked. It's Wizard of Ed. Y'all may have seen this cartoon. The steward came before the king and said, "Sire, the stable hands are upset and concerned about their job security." And the king said, "Just tell them to keep feeding the horses." See, that was an indirect answer to the specific question, but it was true. Just keep feeding the horses. Stable hands are going to have a job. And so how can I save my most precious loved one? It's not by dragging them around. It's by making yourself better. And the only way, listen, the only way you're going to make yourself better, if you can be made better, the only way you're going to be made better is to study the Bible harder. Because if you're at a certain point of goodness, you've gone as far as you can go with what you've got. You've gone as far as toward goodness as you can go with the resources you have. If you get better, if you become a better person, if you become a person that will actually pull your most precious loved one away from the fire, it's got to be more of the Bible. It's got to be more of God's resources, because you've used all you've got. And your most precious loved one has already seen what you can do, but what he needs to see, or she needs to see, is what she can see of God in you. And so the answer is, the angels came before the Lord and said, "Lord, so-and-so down there is concerned about their grandchild. What can they do to get them out of sin?" And the Lord's answer, okay, I'm making this up, okay? The Lord's answer is, tell them to study harder. Let the word work on them. And then they'll do a better job with their grandchild. Study the word harder. The answers are in the book. God left it to us. He's not going to write another one. It's been his plan for all time to have this book written for us. And it's what we've got to go by. That's our lesson. If we can assist anyone in obeying this glorious gospel, please let us help while we stand and sing our song of invitation. Song of invitation. Song of invitation. Song of invitation. Song of invitation.